Today on Movie Royals, we talk about Jackie, 20th Century Women, and La La Land. It's time for Movie Royals. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, G as well.
Movie Royals is a week that does film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you.
So wow, I realised I just randomly clicked my fingers, but in my head I was doing the Movie Royals intro theme.
Is that right?
Yeah, so I was kind of like, when we do our intros, and then in my head I play the theme.
There is music,
and then I randomly
in your head, wherever you go.
Clicked my fingers.
Pretty much.
And we are talking about La La Land.
To a T, yeah. We are. So, yeah, we have a busy podcast today. Again, this is part of the time of year that we're in. These movies are coming at us pretty thick and fast, so in consideration of the awards and plus the limited opportunities in and around holidays, I think the studios are kind of throwing things out and getting us some material that they hope that we will think about should we
And boy, we're thinking about
any
it.
Influence in any of the awards. And I know the San Diego Film Critics will do their vote sometime in December.
Early.
December 12th.
Yes.
So
early-ish.
That's in part why you guys are so busy, as both of you are currently standing members of the San Diego Film Critics
Pigs
Association.
Yes.
We love it.
Pigs in.
But it is. It's fun. Yes. So three movies to talk about this week. We have La La Land, Jackie, and we have 20th Century Women. So we'll skip our Netflix picks and go straight into a review. Where would you like to start?
Dunno. Where do you want to start?
La La Land.
La La Land it is. Go ahead.
Okay, so written and directed by Academy Award nominee Damien Chazelle of Whiplash fame and screenwriter of 10 Cloverfield Lane, he brings us La La Land, which tells the story of Mia, who's played by Emma Stone, an aspiring actress, and Sebastian, played by Ryan Gosling. So this is a repairing of the two. And Sebastian is a dedicated jazz musician, and they're struggling to make ends meet in a city known for crushing hopes and breaking hearts. Set in modern-day Los Angeles, this original musical about everyday life explores the joy and pain of pursuing your dreams. So yet another movie about Hollywood, I think. We spoke about that in our last podcast. So really, this stars Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone, who carry the movie, and J.K. Simmons makes an appearance, and a few others, like John Legend, make an appearance. But really, it's, I think, their movie. So, Yazdi, why don't you start us off this week? What did you think of La La Land?
So when was the last time you saw a film this joyously, giddily exhilarating, so unapologetically romantic? I loved it.
I knew you would.
I loved it.
I said that at the beginning.
I loved it.
Joe.
So there wasn't a moment of this movie that I didn't enjoy, I must admit. It was delightful, sincere, great songs, performances. I think the biggest enemy for me with this movie was the expectation that had been set by Damien Chazelle and the movie Whiplash, which was one of my favourite movies of, I think it was last year or maybe 2 years ago.
2 years ago, actually.
But, you know, honestly, it was lovely. It was exceptionally well shot. I think there was lots of long take show-offiness. I think especially that opening scene. There was like,
is that a single shot?
I couldn't spot any edits, and I think that kind of stuff starts to distract me because I'm like, find the edit, find the cut. but you know, it was just so cleverly done. I mean, I don't know how they did it.
Yeah, because it's done on a freeway.
But yeah,
with cars in the background. Anyway,
but yeah, it was, you know, it was
all that traffic that we experienced on the 5. I think on those weekends. That's why when it happens.
Yeah, so it was unexpected in the sense of this is a very old-fashioned movie. I mean, so unapologetically old-fashioned that I'm just not used to this kind of thing anymore. It was off-putting to me in that regard.
Did you like it?
There was not a moment in this movie that I didn't enjoy. Did I like it, love it? We'll talk about that some more.
Okay, so this is a really lovely movie to watch, and I really admire what it's trying to do. But ultimately, I think this would work better as a stage play than a movie. That's not to say that I didn't enjoy it. It made my heart leap with joy and then ache with pain. I think it's a little bit gimmicky.
It's the film of the musical where the musical hasn't been written yet.
But that's why that's why it's such a big deal. It's an original musical. It's not based on a stage play. It's not a rehash of a previous musical. I mean, when was the last time, you know, we've seen an original musical? I mean, I don't know. Chicago was not original. You know, it's, that's why I think it's quite an achievement. But
yeah.
Yeah.
But it is. I mean, it's very... it's very bold in that it just opens. I mean, this movie, you sit down and, you know, the usual kind of production company, you know, logos flash up and then bang, you are in this world and you are there then for the next 2 hours in something that's just, it's just delightfully done. I think Stone and Gosling here have a lot to be proud of, their work here. And I don't think either of them are excellent singers. But what they do with the roles is just terrifically done. They you know, they commit so deeply to the singing performances. They commit deeply to the dancing. It's, you know, it's just a joy to kind of watch them do their thing here, getting their strut with everything that's done here.
Yeah, and I didn't know if Ryan Gosling is a piano player, but his piano playing is amazing in this movie. I think, but to make the point again, you know, I know that the musical part of this is almost like the gimmick of the movie, but I felt like if you're going to do a throwback to a Gene Kelly type musical, which, you know, we haven't seen in a while, then you do really need stronger singers and dancers. And I can, you know, I think someone like an Anna Kendrick would have been as good in this movie. I mean, I agree with you, Joe, that I think Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone bring great drama to the roles. And Ryan Gosling's piano playing is incredible. But I just wish that if that's the point of this movie, because would it have been as good a movie without that theme in it? I don't know. Then I think you should have had someone who could sing a bit better.
I mean, fair enough, but I actually think the fact that they don't have exceptional voices, which usually takes you out and makes you realize you're in a musical, this seems more like what I would, well, definitely not, but what most people would sound like if they suddenly started singing about what their life was
right,
like.
But you're not in a movie.
Yeah, but I don't think they're bad either. I think they're pretty good. I mean,
yeah, I do too. I mean, I think Rashmi are being very unfair there. I think.
I mean, there's some songs which I absolutely loved. I mean, there's a song that the two of them just play on the piano, which is, I think it's called Yours to Those Who Dream. And, oh, it just filled me up. That just filled me up. I mean, this movie is going for some very high ideals. You said it's very old-fashioned. I mean, it felt to me like it was so giddy. It felt to me like Singing in the Rain.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point.
And it felt to me like some of those Jacques Demy ones, like The Umbrellas of Cherbourg and, you know, those Catherine Deneuve movies. The color scheme.
Yes.
You know, and part of it is like A Star is Born. I mean, it's like drunk on old Hollywood musicals.
And the jazz is amazing, right? Yeah. I mean, Damien Chazelle, I think, is so good at capturing the joy and passion and sometimes pain of music and being a musician. And Ryan Gosling, to me, captured that perfectly. But I had a problem with Emma Stone for some reason, and I love Emma Stone.
Really? She's delightful in this. She's lovely.
She is lovely. But again, I think if you're doing a musical, then you need someone a little bit stronger in the singing, dancing.
They didn't miss a single note, Rashmi. I don't know why you're complaining about the singing. You know, I mean, yes, they don't sing like, you know, Beyonce or Christina Aguilera or, you know, one of these kind of classically loud.
Think about.
Come on, bring it up on iTunes.
Anna Kendrick. You know,
in
Pitch Perfect. Like all those people were great singers. Right, and that was the point of the movie. It was a singing movie. This is a singing and dancing movie.
Leave them alone.
You should have people who can sing and dance.
Stop it now. Let them be. They were terrific in this. Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I think maybe a lot of people are relating to that I'm not is a lot of the old Hollywood references. I mean, my knowledge of kind of this era of Hollywood is very much limited to what I saw as a child over kind of holidays. I've never really paid attention and studied that as an adult. So I think there's a lot in there, a lot of little things that I probably missed in terms of, you know, it's set in LA and it's got all of these kind of old-fashioned Hollywood sensibility to it, but I don't know that they're...
So what was the black and white movie that came out about 3 years ago that won the Artist? Yeah, The Artist. So how much did you complain about The Artist and it being a gimmick?
A lot, I did.
Exactly. So I think this is the same thing here.
This is not gimmicky. It's just... It's a throwback to a particular kind of movies that nobody makes anymore, for good reason.
And I think... I'm with Rashmi in terms of, I think, the gimmick is there. But The Artist was... for me so abhorrent in its it was clown-like in its use of that particular silent movie. I mean it didn't need to be told in that way. It was just somebody came up with a style of movie making that was very, very reminiscent of those old silent films.
Right, and I think this was trying to do that but in an updated way.
All right, yeah, I'll give you that.
Okay, good.
But it's completely unapologetic for it. And I think the gimmick is transcended to some extent by the quality of it all. I mean, it's still very, very... You know, these songs are not, you know, the first notes that they strung together. There's a lot of love being put into these songs and these numbers that they perform.
I was just amazed by its virtuosity. I mean, it's just so... gifted, you know. I mean, it's a weird thing to say, but in terms of its artistic virtuosity, it reminded me a lot of Birdman. You know how Birdman was constantly surprising you with, like, how did they do this? How did they do this? I kind of was constantly doing that. I mean, the movie is made of these long takes, and I don't think Los Angeles has looked in any movie as achingly beautiful as it does here.
It's stunning to watch.
There's like things set in the, you know, at the Griffith, Griffith
Laboratory. Yeah.
Observatory.
Thank you. And, you know,
even on the streets where there's graffiti, it still looks good.
Yeah. And, you know, Emma Stone, you know, she's not just, you know, a wallflower. I mean, she, in the last act of the movie, she brings it on. I mean, she really brings it on emotionally. And you feel for her. And, you know, I think it's about... The one thing it made me realize is how difficult it is to make a living being an artist. You know, if you are a struggling writer, or if you're a struggling jazz pianist, or if you're a struggling actor, it's very difficult to make a living. And, you know, the movie kind of really touches upon that. And I like that as much as its head is in the clouds, in its last act, and the last 10 minutes of the movie are brilliant.
It's very, very well done.
You know, it kind of also tethers you to the everyday reality, which is pretty cruel, and it's not about your head in the clouds. So,
and it's about real life, and it does have a lot of good themes in it. I give you that. And I'm making out like I didn't enjoy the movie, and I did. So let's sum this one up. I can go first. So I think ultimately this is a clever, smart movie that's as much about being in love as it is about Hollywood. And I think that's the genius of the movie. And I think the fact that it is kind of a throwback is interesting. It adds another layer to it. I'll give this one a 7 out of 10.
This movie just absolutely filled me up. And it just made me unconditionally happy. And the very fact that we're even talking about Singing in the Rain or A Star is Born is incredible. And the movie kind of, you know, has this old world charm, but it still recognizes a very new world acceptance of reality. And to kind of balance that while singing and dancing, and, you know, it just made me happy. This is why I go to the movies. And, you know, I'm going to give a third 9 out of 10. I mean, I love this movie so much.
Wow.
I don't know. If I'm miserable, I want to watch La La Land. I want to watch it 5 times. I want to watch it on a rainy day. It's just so perfect.
Joe?
Yeah, I enjoyed it for its sincerity. Is it my cup of tea? Probably not. And I think that's where I think I struggle with the movie in terms of making a broad overall recommendation. You've got to let yourself open up to this stuff. You've got to be in the mood for it too. Mm-hmm. This isn't the kind of thing that I would wholeheartedly recommend to somebody. Go see, you know, if you want to see a great movie. I mean, I think this is a movie that you can see with some moderate expectation. But with that said, you know, I really, really, really did like its sincerity. It gave everything. These actors gave everything to this role. The director had his heart in it.
And what great chemistry.
The cinematographer, everyone just committed 150% to this movie. So for that, I'm going to give them a very well-deserved 8 out of 10.
Not bad.
Yeah.
7, 8, and a 9.
So,
and you know, this is Damien Chazelle who I absolutely hated last year with Whiplash for the cut.
That's right.
You know, that's right. You hated Whiplash.
I hated him.
Loved
well, I didn't
Whiplash.
Hate the movie. The movie
Loved
is Whiplash. Beautiful, but you know his message. I really hated the message in that movie, and to see him, he's making a great leap, I think, and you know I can't wait to watch the third movie he makes. So good.
Okay, let's perhaps talk about 20th Century Women, which comes to us from writer-director Mike Mills, who we most recently saw direct the movie Beginners in 2011, which is a movie with Ewan McGregor and Christopher Plummer in it, which I think all three of us enjoyed very much.
Yeah.
So this movie is set during the summer of 1979, where a Santa Barbara single mom and who is also a boarding house landlord, played by Annette Bening, decides that the best way she can parent her teenage son is to enlist her young tenants. A quirky punk photographer, played by Greta Gerwig, a mellow handyman, played by Billy Crudup, and her son Shrewd best friend, played by Elle Fanning, to serve as role models in a changing world. So, I've really read the names of the main cast members there. So, again, just to recap, Annette Bening, Elle Fanning, Greta Gerwig, and Billy Crudup were in this, which to me set the bar very high in terms of expectations. Guys, what did you think of 20th Century Women?
So, what an interesting, unusual movie that is one of the best coming-of-age movies that I've seen in recent times. Forget Edge of 17 and go watch this one instead. There is so much material covered in this that if not done well, I would be complaining that it threw the kitchen sink into the storyline. But this isn't the case in this movie. This is expertly put together and very enjoyable to watch with some incredible performances.
Yeah, this one didn't work for me.
Really?
It didn't work for me. I mean,
hilarious.
I'm sorry, it was so unpredictable. Maybe I was just sleepy that night. Maybe I want to be.
I thought this was going to be a Yazdi movie.
I know, it's such a Yazdi movie, and those actors, I love Greta Gerwig, I love Annette Bening. I really admire Elle Fanning. But it just seemed, I don't know, it seemed kind of pointless.
At certain point, my mouth just dropped.
it's very loose-limbed and very free. I mean, consider something like Diary of a Teenage Girl,
which to me has become the golden standard of coming-of-age movies. I think
it doesn't have the focus of that movie. It was too loose-limbed for me. Which is not to say I hated it, but I don't understand the the lavish praises.
I will educate you during this podcast. Joe.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, which camp is Joe in? Where are you sleeping tonight?
So far.
It's certainly not
Yazdi's or Rashmi's house.
I was going to say, certainly not on Yazdi's couch, because I think what I'm going to say here might anger him. But the movie, The Way, Way Back, this felt like a better version of The Way, Way Back.
Say that. Put those words back in your mouth.
We're going to come to blows on this one. But, it reminded me very much of that movie where, it is very much a young boy trying to find his way. And it was, a coming-of-age story. I think, to your point, Yassi, it is a little disjointed. It's got these very different characters all dealing with very different things. And they all have their arcs and their needs and their desires. I think what pulls it together was Annette Bening. I think she had this kind of... it was almost like a hub.
Yeah.
She was like this hub around which these characters revolved. And she had such wisdom in the way that she threw out nuggets. She was always very thoughtful and perhaps contrivedly so in the sense of, the way she dealt with her son. She was never inappropriate in what she said, even though she was perhaps far from the perfect mother. So you know, perhaps I'm relating this back to kind of my own bringing.
I was just going to say that.
You know, with you know, essentially a single parent family for much of the time. And it had people kind of come in and out of my life that kind of shaped the way I think. Some of them imparted wisdom. Some of them told me not, you know, how exactly not to be. So, yeah, I did relate to the story in a way that I think, you know, pulled it together in a way that I think, Yazdi, you were maybe looking for more of a strong A through B narrative, mm-hmm. which... this movie doesn't really have, you know, it is a journey, but it doesn't tell us a linear story where, you know, there's a character's journey and they turn into something else at the end.
Yeah, I kind of felt, and maybe, Joe, it's because I know your story, that I kind of related to this in some way, because I felt like we were privileged to have a window into a young boy's life during informative years. And I think it's true that in those times gone by, and I think it's true for all of us, children were raised by villages. And mm-hmm. so I think that this is a view into that world of three strong women who are part of this boy's life and how they influence him. And that often you don't get your parenting just from your parents. You get it from other people who are around you. From life, right? So that's what I very much enjoyed about
Fair
it.
Fair enough, yeah.
And I think that the movie was elevated for me by amazing acting. And I agree, Annette Bening was just incredible. And I think a lot of it is in how she portrays the character and the things that we learn about the character from the way that she dresses and the way that her hair is. And I haven't seen that so well done, where costume plays such an important role in how the character is shaped. And we saw that with the Greta Gerwig character, and we saw that with the Annette Bening character. Even Billy Crudup. I mean, and we're going to talk about Jackie in a moment, but this is where I kind of realized that Billy Crudup is a chameleon.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope he's going to get
his time
some recognition.
I hope his time will come.
Because he's so different in this compared to Jackie, which we'll talk about. I had a problem with the Elle Fanning character, but I can't decide if that's just how well acted it was, or whether it's just the fact that I've actually known girls like that, and I had kind of like a guttural reaction to that. But that's really what it did for me, Yazdi.
Yeah, I would say the latter.
I really feel like it was just one of those movies where you had to let it wash over you, which you normally do really well.
I do very well. I don't know why.
But I feel like this was just a window into a small period of time, into this character's life. And I feel like if we had watched the movie of him as an adult, it would have been a different movie. But I like that we kind of just got to view a window into a time period.
Yeah, maybe we'll get a screener and I need to watch this again, because I really had such high expectations. Remember, I was the one who was telling you guys, we have to watch 20th Century Women.
It was the fourth movie of the week.
We have to watch this. And yeah, usually I'm perfectly happy with the slice in the life of someone, but it just seemed too...
You know what it was?
What?
You had La La Land in your head.
Maybe I was too influenced by La La Land by that point. But no, I will absolutely grant it to you that, you know, the acting is just... really very good year. I think if I have to pick something apart, I really didn't care for the actor who played the 15-year-old boy. And everything
my
that,
jaw has dropped again.
Really?
Yeah.
You think so? Because everything that was happening to him, first of all, I found it hard to believe that this would happen to a 15-year-old, maybe a 17-year-old. But maybe I'm just completely clueless about the sexual mores of the young teenagers.
So it's Lucas Jade Zuman, which you didn't mention, Joe, in your intro, but that was the guy.
Did you believe a 15-year-old would go through all that?
I did. And I'll tell you why, Yazdi, because I feel like boys who are raised by the mothers, I have to be very careful what I say now.
my mother-in-law's listening. Your mother-in-law's listening, sorry.
Yes. I think... they make beautiful men. And I think that this character was someone who was beautifully shaped by the women around him. And I think they make amazing adults.
No, I don't disagree with that.
And yeah. I feel like in a situation where he has to be the man of the house, and not because his mother's demanding him to be the man of the house, but for the sheer fact that his father isn't around, he feels that weight on his shoulders. Then I feel like you end up with 15, you know, like 12 to 17 year olds who are much more mature than their counterparts who are raised in families where both parents play a big role.
Yeah. I mean, I think absolutely. And I think the movie takes a very bold decision here to not do so Beginners could be criticized, I think, for being perhaps, you know, it's based around an aha moment where the story kind of pivots around, mm-hmm. and there are revelations about the characters that suddenly put a lot of things into context, and you know, it is that you know, that moment of that was not as I had expected, right? The world changes on you. And this movie was brave enough to not do that, I think. I think it was very much a reflection of, you know, you pick up snippets and bits and pieces from the people around you. I love the Greta Gerwig character, where she plays, you know, a very un-Greta Gerwig-like character, perhaps maybe more in costume than in voice.
Yeah, I agree.
But still, I think, you know, the strength of what she's going through and its impact on him. And all of these female characters had some journey that they were taking that I think shaped the way that this boy felt about, you know, women, but also, you know, life. And it was just delightful to kind of see it play out in that way.
I think you need to watch it again.
I think I need to. I mean, it just felt to me like anchorless. It just felt like a whole bunch of episodes.
Yeah.
I mean, and I love Boyhood. Right, I love Boyhood.
And I was actually going to.
It's episodes interesting. Put together.
I was almost going to call this Girlhood in my review. Apart from, you know, the boy is
a boy.
Boy, but the movie is very much a feminist from a feminine perspective.
Okay, let's sum this one up then. Yasti, why don't you go first?
I'll be generous and give it a 7 out of 10. I love the acting in this movie.
Yeah.
I had an issue with the structure of the movie, and I don't know why. Maybe I was just having a bad day and I need to review it again. And so I choose the right to increase my score upon said second viewing, but right now it felt, or maybe it was just a question of very high expectations, but it just came off looking very disjointed to me. But I would still recommend people watch it just for those amazing performances. Greta Gerwig is so good here, and Annette Bening, God, give her an Oscar already.
Joe?
I like this movie very much. I don't think I need to repeat anything that I've said already about it, but it's a strong 8 out of 10 for me. I think it's easily recommended to many audiences. And I think, you know, you got to accept it for what it is. I think it can annoy. I can see why it might annoy some people, but, you know, it's... For me, it's just a superior version of The Way, Way Back from a couple of years ago. And, you know, it's kind of what I wanted from that movie, but that one felt almost too contrived and too, you know, mushy.
Another really strong 8 from me. This goes deep on a lot of issues without being precious or at all twee.
8 out of 10.
Yeah,
yeah.
Strong 8,
yeah. Good, okay. So movie number 3 of this marathon podcast is
Jackie.
Yeah. Yasti, can you...
So Jackie is from Pablo Larraín, the splendid Chilean director who made the remarkable film No, which was nominated for Best Foreign Film a couple of years ago with Gael García Bernal. And
who, you know, we love in Mozart in the Jungle.
But, you know, honestly... I haven't seen Jackie yet, but if folks haven't seen No, they need to immediately put
That's
it on their queue
movie,
and
yeah.
watch it.
It's
haven't seen it. Nope.
This is Pablo Larraín's first English language film, I believe, Jackie.
Wow.
And interestingly, he has in the same year another movie coming out called Neruda, which is about, you know, the poet Neruda. But Jackie essentially follows Jackie Kennedy. Yes, that Jackie Kennedy in the days after John F. Kennedy's assassination, and how she deals with, you know, all the different pressures that come upon her unexpectedly following the death of her husband. It's based on a story by Noah Oppenheim, and it has a pretty amazing cast. Natalie Portman plays Jacqueline Kennedy. John Hurt is here. Peter Sarsgaard is here. Billy Crudup, who we just spoke about, is here. Greta Gerwig, who we just spoke about, is here. Mm-hmm. And then it also includes Beth Grant and Max Casella. So you know, this movie has kind of been blazing a fiery trail ever since it opened on the festival circuit. It won, I think, the Best Audience Award at Toronto Film Festival. And it's very, very highly regarded. It's considered one of those prestige films. Is it deserving of all the accolades?
So this movie I just watched this morning, actually. So we were privileged enough to get a screener. And here's what I'll say about it. It is beautifully shot, written, directed, and acted. I felt like I admired this movie more than I liked it. And I think it's primarily due to its kind of unconventional structure. It felt as if it was edited into its final form rather than written, in the way that it played out. And I think that kind of irritated me a little bit, because I was looking for, you know, perhaps more of a lifetime version of events. This is a biopic after all, and I felt like I wanted to know more about the character. But I think the movie focuses on a very small period of time, and it portrays the character rather than tells us about them. I think a little unsatisfying for me, but I can see why everyone is raving about it. Portman is off the charts with this.
Yeah, anyone who knows me well knows that I'm obsessed by the JFK era and the JFK story and the Kennedys, and I'm a conspiracy theorist, and I love this stuff. So I had a lot of expectation going into this movie. There is no doubt in my mind, like you said, Joe, that Natalie Portman will be nominated for an Oscar for this movie, because she literally carries the entire thing and she's in every single scene. However, I think the fact that this movie literally deals with the week of his death mostly is both its success and its failure. And I'll say a little bit more about that. I think it sucks because it's so focused and in that short period of time. But I think what it does very well is it enables us to see the facets of this woman and what she did for the Kennedy name and family, mm-hmm. and then failure, because I would have loved to have seen what made her that way.
Yeah.
So I probably know more about the character because I've done a lot of reading about JFK and the Kennedys overall. And I guess I was disappointed that we didn't get more of a biopic about Jackie Kennedy, which the name would imply. It's called Jackie. But I think it effectively captures who she was by doing these little flashbacks and concentrating it just on those 4 or 5 days. So I think I kind of, like you, Joe, I didn't love it like I loved many of the movies that we've spoken about, but it was very admirable in the way that it was put together.
Yeah, I mean, the movie cuts back and forth from like an interview and a discussion with a priest, and then the events of the assassination, and then the time afterwards. And it completely just, almost without reason in my mind, chops between those different occurrences. And I think that's where I found it hard to kind of pull a thread between it. But I think they were all tied thematically, in that there was a good reason for going to the next line of dialogue to show you a different facet of the character at a time that it was appropriate. And that might be to just juxtapose, you know, some interview that she did before the assassination with, you know, something that she's forced to do or say at around the time of the assassination. Mm. So again, I think its structure is a little
jarring,
frustrating in some ways. I mean, I found it hard to kind of follow it along. But at the same time, I think there are very good reasons for doing what they did. And like I say, I feel in some ways that they shaped this movie in the editing room more than the kind of shot it, and, you know, from a script that was written this way. And I think, you know, it's very documentary-like in that regard. I mean, it's done very authentically. I think the look and feel of the movie,
the production is incredible.
Is absolutely of its time. I mean, to think that it was shot this year or in the past couple of years is almost odd to me, because it looks, and it's not
and the texture of it also feels old.
It's not a stylist thing. It feels like it's of that
time.
Yeah, and they very cleverly refilmed real footage in black and white with Natalie Portman and the actors, and then spliced it into the movie. But you can clearly see that they've actually got some real news footage film as well in there, which is cleverly done. I think that it's interesting when I was watching the movie, and I've probably had a few more days to digest because I did make the screening. I had the same problems you had, Joe, initially with the priest versus the journalist. But I think now on reflection, I see that one is an internal voice and one mm-hmm. is an external voice.
No, it's absolutely.
And that's very smart. Right, to film a movie where you kind of get to hear a character's internal thoughts about what's happening to them, and then also see it externalized as to what she wants to present to the external world, is actually quite genius. And I think I only got that because I've had time to reflect on it.
No, absolutely. And
I think it's somewhat relevant to the way that we live today, especially because we've just been through an election. There's a great line in the movie that says, "Just because it's written down doesn't make it true." And I think Jackie Kennedy was the first lady literally to allow television into the White House. And the thought being that if people could see it, then it would allow for the truth to be shown. That's what the character says and what the character tells us. But that's so different to how we view things now and on television. So I thought that was actually very clever and relevant to kind of weave that into the story. And I think what really blew me away was just the incredible acting by Billy Crudup, who has this real tension. There's a real tension and almost angst and almost hatred that Jackie has for the reporter who's telling the story. And it's interesting because she thinks she's giving him a scoop, yet he feels like he's doing her a service by telling her story. So there's this great tension that's created between the two of them, which I thought was good. And then Natalie Portman is amazing.
Yeah, she's very much Jackie Kennedy Onassis in this movie in terms of what I know of the woman. She has the right physicality, and I think, you know, some might accuse her of overplaying it a little bit. There were a couple of moments where I felt it was you know, more like a very good impression of Jackie Kennedy. But for the rest of the movie, especially some of the more honest emotional moments, I bought it. I mean,
totally.
You know, this could have been her on camera. You know, if we'd had, like, you know, secret cameras put around her life at that time.
Does it have like an emotional arc, or it's more of a snapshot of a period in time? You know what I mean? Like,
I think for me, it begins somewhere and it ends somewhere.
Okay.
And it does it very well.
Yeah, I mean, it has. So, I mean, here's how I was going to sum up the movie, but I think it shows us the character rather than tells us about her. And I think for me, the emotional arc was kind of around the loneliness that this woman who was in this very public situation must have endured in that time. So for me, really, it's not necessarily an arc of a journey. It's this is what it would have been like to have been the president's wife post assassination, and the conflicting emotions and feelings, and the absolute solitude despite being surrounded constantly by people and people wanting to control the message. And, you know, it was kind of a messy situation for everyone. But it kind of reminded me of that moment in the movie W, when George Bush is up on the podium with, you know, being fired at with very difficult questions. And, you know, he's clearly not equipped for that. I kind of felt the solitude of somebody in a situation that was just so, you know, they were not prepared for. And I think I felt that way for her here. She's a much stronger character than W in that movie. But that's what it reminded me most of.
Score.
So the score was absolutely haunting. Let's talk about the music, because I think the music was very much a character in the movie as well. I think it's jarring. It's very loud at times, and it kind of ramps up and comes from nowhere almost. Like, whoa. But it's I think that's going to be recognized. And in terms of my review score, again, it's a movie that I very, very much admired. I can't say that I loved it, so I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10, just because I think it's well worth your time, it's well worth watching. But it was so hard for me to connect with it emotionally based on the seemingly haphazard, absolutely not haphazard, but the seemingly haphazard way of constructing the narrative.
Ultimately, this movie works because it shows the grief and heartbreak of a widow and a mother, and it takes us behind the curtain of Camelot without criticizing the presidency in any way, but it does in a very short period expose just how smart and underestimated at the time Jackie Kennedy was. For me, it's... I think I'm being stingy, but I agree with Joe Seven.
Okay. Yeah, it's a little frustrating.
I mean, she, I think, deserves a 10, right? Natalie Portman...
I kind of want to watch the Lifetime movie of this, you know.
Yeah, but it's disconnected, and I think that's on purpose.
No,
I think it's intentionally keeping you at arm's length because that's how the character was. That's how Jackie Kennedy was. I mean, let's not forget in her later life she kind of cut herself off.
Yeah, there is nothing accidental about the way that the movie tells its story. It's clearly this is what they set out to do, but it can be a little frustrating to those of us who want a biopic.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I was thinking about Oliver Stone's movie.
JFK.
JFK, and it's not that movie. And I would love to see an Oliver Stone version of Jackie in some ways.
You know what? You could mash this movie up with that, and I think it would look great.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So we're going over 40 minutes again on this episode. We reviewed La La Land, Jackie, and 20th Century Women. So let us know what you think of these movies. We thought they were great. It's that time of year again. So many good movies. So with that, I will sign off in our usual way with too many movies, too many... Too little time.
Never been
too many
truer.
Movies, too many time. Too much many time seconds. Spent at work not watching movies. So yeah, too many movies, too little time. Good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.